So we have three guest speakers who I'm very pleased to have tonight that have had a variety of experiences that have brought them near to death. And our first speaker tonight will be Chris Taylor. Chris is a young guy. As he gets up here, you'll realize, okay, there's a young buck, probably not afraid to take the world on. And that's the kind of courage I think it took for the profession he was in, which was firefighting. Fighting that monster fire that gets out of control so easily in the wild. Thinking he could take the world on, he's had several experiences that have probably brought him a little closer to the realization that our lives are very fragile. So, without further ado, we'll bring Chris on, and I'll introduce our other speakers as we go through the evening. Chris Taylor.
All right. Happy to be here tonight. I was a little unsure when Doug asked me if I would participate tonight. He told me a little bit about what you guys talk about and what you're interested in, and I was a little unsure what my experience was in the past. I've never actually been so close to death that I actually died myself, but I have had a couple of situations where I came so close, it changed my perspective and my leadership style. As I was leading a crew of eight men on a fire up in Idaho, some of you may have heard about this fire. It's called the Clear Creek Fire, or Panther Creek Fire, up in the Salmon Chalice National Forest in Idaho. My crew was a pretty green crew, as we call it in the Forest Service. All of them, except for the six members of the leadership team, were brand new out of fire school. So there's 18 people who are brand new. And we were designated as a mop-up crew, which means that we go around and just clean up little hot spots after the fire has already come through. Not really a dangerous time for anyone. It's more of a time to get a tan, lay back, kick back, have a good time. This fire in particular, we were called when the fire was still under 5,000 acres. Because of how dry and hot it was in the fire in the area, they started calling in other crews immediately, as far south as southern Utah, where it took us 9 hours on a small fire bus to get up to the fire base camp up in Idaho. But when we got there, 9 hours later, we found out that the fire had went from 5,000 acres to 70,000. We were one of six hand crews on the fire. They needed hotshot crews rather than just mop-up crews, because the fire was way too intense to need a mop-up crew right at that moment. So they reclassified us to a hotshot crew. The hotshot crews are always in the hotter parts of the fire, the more dangerous areas, the spots where it's constantly flaring up and the dangers are imminent every step of the way. We were put into the hottest places in the fire immediately. Being only six crews on the entire fire, we had 10 fire engines for support of water pumps and stuff like that, and one helicopter. On a 70,000 acre fire, it's usually about three or four helicopters, but it just hadn't gotten to the area yet. So we only had one helicopter. And they put us in an area where the attempt was to try to make it a line big enough and the pole long enough that it would stop that main head of the fire. The fire was still a grass fire. It was still down in the bottom fuel pipes, grasses, brushes, things like that. Hadn't got up into the crown yet, which the crown is the treetops. And when that gets into to the treetops, the little shelters that they provide for us are useless because it's so hot it will turn it into a hot pocket, is what we call it. They just bake you right there, and then they just pull the drawstrings, and you have to prepare your own body back.
Like some of your body?
Yeah, the freezer section, yeah. That was us, only much hotter. So we were put into this fire where we were trying to make this fire line, that was a six-mile fire line up a canyon. Idea was to make a clear-cut vegetation line where we removed all vegetation, clear down to the barrier, about 3 feet wide, and then we had our saw teams going through, cutting down any ladder-type fuels that would make the ground fire go up into the treetops. So they were removing that, and then there was a new system at the time of laying down a water line and putting sprinklers on it so it would wet an area about 60 feet wide. That was our responsibility for it. We were given 3 days to complete this line. That was the estimated time it would take for the fire to get to the area. We were given all the resources that we could muster on such limited resource fire. They gave us 8 pumps, water pumps, the portable water pumps that they were going to have a helicopter bring into us. The helicopter got loaded up and started into the canyon, and the winds were so erratic in the canyon that it almost sent the chopper down. So we ended up packing all of these water pumps and hoses and lines and fittings and everything for this water line on our backs 6 miles up this canyon. We were exhausted, but we ended up completing the line within 2 days, which was the day ahead of schedule. But it ended up that didn't matter because a low pressure front was moving into the area, which created 40 mile an hour winds and started pushing the fire at 25 to 30 miles an hour. We decided, the decision was made to defend the line regardless of the new dangers. We and 3 other hand crews were stationed along this line to help defend it. As the fire started coming closer, we had 2 lookouts to warn us of any dangers, but along 6 miles of fire line, with only 2 lookouts, that's a pretty sparse lookout team. They posted those at high locations where they could see most of the fire line. We were depending on them to keep us safe. They started reporting spot fires miles in between 3 and 5 miles away from the main fire because of the winds. Winds would pick up an ember, drop it 3 to 5 miles away, and that ember would spark into a new fire and start pushing toward us. Shortly after we got those reports, we started getting reports that we had spot fires behind us in the area that we were supposed to be defending. So one crew was sent up the canyon wall face to try to put these spot fires out to keep that under control. They headed up the mountain, and about 10 minutes after they started up the mountain, we got calls that more and more spot fires were popping up, so they sent my squad up the mountainside. We were about halfway up at the and we started getting reports of rock slides. When a fire starts burning, the first thing it will do is burn out all the debris that's holding rocks in their place. And then these rocks will start rolling down the mountainside. These rocks can be anywhere from the size of a basketball to about half a ton. They're big enough to take down trees, and just under their own momentum, they get other rocks rolling as well. We got a report that they were starting to roll, and my first reaction, being the go-getter, invincible young man that I was, wow, now I can go faster because the crew above me is going to tell me whenever these rocks are coming down the mountain. So I'll be able to prove how good my crew is. We'll be able to get up there so fast and be able to make an impact on these spot fires. Then it'll slow the other crew down, so it will automatically look better, right? But we ended up catching up to the other crew just as they were reaching the spot fires. And right as we got to the first spot fire, another rock slide was called, and it was rolling right toward the crew that was ahead of us. And most of them got out of the way. One man was gone. He was hit by one of the rolling rocks just above the knee, and it took him out, and he rolled downhill with this rock for about 100 yards. Ended up with a broken leg, a bunch of cuts and bruises, and a concussion. We had to get our medic to come up to the site to stabilize him, and I sent 2 of my newest squad members to help escort this man off the mountain, because he was no longer able to fight fire. We needed to get him off. So the medic and two of my guys started back down the mountain. The rest of my crew and I joined the crew that had gone up before us, and we started fighting these spot fires.
So this is all after you packed in the...
Yes, after we packed in the hoses and the pumps and all this stuff. So the sprinklers were going down in the base of the canyon, but we're on the opposite side because the spot fires just keep popping up and popping up. This is still day 2. We've been in this area for, it was about 40 hours. So we were working, the first day it was 20 hours, and the second day we were in hour 18 when this started going up. we were fighting these spot fires. We kept having more and more pop up. We had one of our saw guys, he was cutting the burning trees, trying to knock the fire down so it didn't climb up into the crown of the trees that would just cook us. And so he was trying to do that, and he was cutting a tree. As he was cutting this widowmaker, his swamper, the guy who's taking out the stuff that he's already cut, yelled and said, "There's a rock slide coming down the mountain." And he had to drop his saw and try to jump out of the way. And the tree came down. He did avoid the rock, but the tree came down and landed right on top of him. A bunch of other guys jumped up and pulled the tree off of him, but he was already in bad shape. The damage had been done. I was one of three firefighters who had any medical training at all. The first aid training that squad bosses go through. So I was called up to help, to try to help assist this poor man. As I got up to the guy, I could see that he had about a dozen or more punctures from the tree branches as they impaled him. They didn't break off clean at the base of the tree. They went right into him a couple of inches. He was bleeding profusely. We had to stop the bleeding, slow it down. And as we were working on him, it gave us a few minutes to look at the situation we placed ourselves in. We realized that we had broken a lot of the safety rules going up this mountain. And the first one was no safety zones. We didn't have any safety zones at all. We were so gathered up in the task of trying to put out the spot fires that we had forgotten about it. And so we had nowhere to run to when things started getting bad. We radioed our lookouts and asked them where the best place to find an escape route was that we had set up beforehand. That we were told that the fire was completely surrounded us. We were trapped on this mountain, and this man, he was unconscious, had holes in him, bleeding all over, and we were trapped. And the fire had gone all the way around us, and there was no way out. So we stabilized this guy as much as we could, got the bleeding to stop, and then we used some tree limbs to immobilize him and took him down the mountain. Got back down to the base of the canyon. As we were got to the base of the canyon, there was only one other crew still in the base of the canyon. So there were about 38 men still in the bottom of this canyon. And the fire is coming toward us from every direction. Got the report that the fire was still going at about 25 miles an hour, closing in on just about a mile and a half away from us. So we got every water pump that we could find, what hadn't been already burned up by the fire, and hooked them all up into one central spot toward the base of the fire, which was one of our only escape routes, and got everything together and started trying to punch a hole through the bottom of this fire, which was a crown fire. Trees in Idaho, they're all pinyon pines. They're all about 120 to 150 feet tall, and then you have flames shooting off the top of those at least 50 feet. So you have a wall of flame about 200 feet tall. And the roar of the fire was so great that we couldn't hear each other speaking to. So we had to use hand signals to communicate. As we were trying to fight our way out, the main fire that we were trying to stop crested the top of the canyon. And it was a huge wall of flame, 200 feet tall, shooting flame lengths 200 to 250 feet in the air. Instantly filled the whole canyon with smoke. Smoke billowing into the canyon. You couldn't breathe. Your eyes would start to sting and burn because of the smoke and soot in the air. And then the heat starts to build. And it's probably just out in the sun, 102 degrees on this fire as it is. And then you add a 200-foot wall of flame coming towards you. The heat starts rising really quickly. We finally punched a big enough hole in the bottom of the fire that we were able to start running out. And I think fueled by panic, we went a little bit too soon. It was either stay there and die or run and try to make it. I was assigned to help pack out our injured man. So we were staged, ready to go. bottom of this inferno. All of us were in a state of panic. We weren't thinking, right? We were just throwing water on this flame and running as fast as we could until the hose ran out, and then we just started running. It was so hot, my boots melted. The bottom of my boots got about an inch bigger on the bottoms because of they melted and just expanded. It was 30 men. Ended up with second-degree burns from the heat of the flames. The flames never actually touched us, but because of the heat and intensity of the fire, it heated the whole area up like an oven. I ended up with one burn on the cheek right here, a blister, and one on my back. And I felt lucky when I saw the rest of the guys in the shape they were in when we got it off the mountain. The guy that had been hit by the tree, we finally got him down to the medics at the bottom of the canyon, and they found out that his back was broken. He probably would never walk again. He had a collapsed lung. He was the closest to death that out of all of us. And I remember as we were loading him into the ambulance so they could take him to the hospital, looking at him and realizing that that could have been any one of my men or myself. That realization at that moment, before that moment, it was all about results. What could we do? Like, how can we put this fire out? How can we make ourselves look awesome? After that, it was about getting home, being able to walk off the fire line, not run, not have to fight our way out, but have a controlled exit where we walk, not having to run away or try to find some way to get out of the situation we've gotten ourselves into. And so the safety training that they put all firefighters through became very important to all of us. All of us that had been trapped in that canyon had a newfound sense of responsibility to the safety measures that are imposed upon us. Before, we felt they were a penalty, something that held us back. You know, you got in trouble, that's what you had to do for a few days until they stopped watching. After that, we made sure that we were following them. We made sure that we had the safety zones. We made sure we had the escape routes planned in advance so that we had some place to go. We nearly lost 38 men. Several of them were my personal best friends. I plunged them into a situation where it was flee or die. I remember thinking how reckless I had been. Because, you know, if it was just me, I would have laughed about it and, you know, maybe changed a few things in the future. But I had 8 men who were depending on me for their safety. That was a huge realization for me, that in a leadership position, not only are you responsible for yourself, but you're responsible for others. I never let any of them do anything that would endanger their lives. I had another experience later on where I was sent into another box canyon. They told me to send 4 of my guys, and I told them no. I would not send 4 of my guys. So I went myself, but I wouldn't send my guys. Because I didn't want to be the one that had to go and tell their parents, their girlfriends, their wives, that because of my actions, they were dead. I went into this other canyon, similar situation, ended up having to run out. But that one, it was either go in or lose my job. So obviously I loved what I was doing and I wanted to keep doing it. Went in there, another box canyon, we were setting a back burn. The winds always change in box canyons. And it started blowing the fire back on us. And so we had to run about a quarter of a mile up our escape route to get away from this fire. And the fire had gotten into the crown again. And we could see it jumping tree by tree over the top of us. It was another tense situation, but we were prepared for it. We had planned for it. We had our safety routes. We had our safety zones so that we didn't get in a situation where it was fight or die. It was a controlled escape even though we were running, and ended up running so fast and so hard that we were spitting blood at the top of the hill. That's my experience.
Do you still feel you don't buy any kind of like...
No, I don't. I got married and my wife said, you're done. The program is pretty extensive. It's when you're out of a fire, you kind of make your own rules in a lot of respects, because the closest supervisors and the people that are telling you that safety protocol is so important are miles and miles and miles away. There are several of the people that were with me on this fire that are still fighting fires, and they're two of them are now trainers in the fire school. And so I got out of it and have chosen a different career now. Partially, my wife is responsible for that because she didn't want me in situations like that. I mean, you can stay with telling her these stories as well.
Question is, has this affected you and your conduct of your life or, you know, the way that you live?
It has. It's made me a lot more cautious than I was initially. I thought I was invincible. So did my whole crew. They all thought the comic book heroes were stories based on their lives. So it changed me, made me aware of my own mortality. At any moment, I realized that something can turn on you and squash it. Now I'm all about safety. Even now, like I'm over the back room at Target, and I preach safety. Ladder safety. We had a guy up in Idaho a few years ago that fell off a ladder and died. And so I'm always preaching ladder safety to my team now. I make sure that they understand that, yeah, you can have the highest pull rate, but if you end up dead at the end of the day, it doesn't do any good. Exactly. Yeah. You can't pull very much if you've broken your arms or broken your legs. So.
How about your values?
My values, I definitely have changed some of my values. Like when I got married, my family became my number one responsibility. I have a daughter and a wife that depend on me. My wife raises my little girl, and when she said, you're not fighting fires anymore, while it's very lucrative, it's very dangerous. And so I didn't put up much of a fight when she said, you're done.
The second fear besides fighting fires is speaking in public, so very grateful for Chris facing that one tonight. That's a near-death experience for some of us. The lesson I got from that is we pick up a lot of lessons in life, but they don't seem to mean much until we're faced with the reality of consequences. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.